Hello, this is Janet Gallen. Actually, today welcoming you to what I am now calling the Marshall Mend Show. Marshall is back with us, and it is actually Love Letters Live. Marshall is back for another visit because he still has so much to say. And I think we're, for those of you who have heard his last two Love Letters Live, you know that he started out in Los Angeles and he went into the meat business and he was selling meat to Lonnie Anderson and Gary Marshall and a whole bunch of other people and various police officers, right? Yes. And then moved to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Janitors
and so,
too.
Oh, and janitors and everybody.
Everybody.
So he gave up the meat business and he is now in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And apparently you were told, what about Coeur d'Alene? Well, first of all, you were told about it, and you went to look at it, right?
Oh, yeah. I went to look at it, and we were there for 3 days, and we decided at that point real quick, well, we looked at a house. It was overlooking a lake, and Dolly says, boy, this is beautiful. I said, you like it? She says, I love it. I said, okay, we'll take it, and that was it. She didn't know what happened. And
okay. So what was life like there? You had talked last time about having taken real estate courses and learning that business.
Right.
So pick up on that. What was that like, your life there in the real estate business?
Well, I made a lot of money on my house.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, I made more money on my house than I did, that I had saved up. And I did pretty good as far as in my business. So I figured I'm in the wrong business. I need to be buying houses. I could have bought houses in my neighborhood for $25,000 a house.
Mm-hmm.
Today, they're worth about $750 a house for that same house.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You did say that you had taken real estate classes and you realized you should be investing and selling. So
right.
there we are.
I read a book. At that point, I had read a book about investing in houses. And so I'm going to invest in real estate when I get to Coeur d'Alene. That was my decision, and moving to Coeur d'Alene, a place that we fell in love with, and that was it. And then we got up there in March the 10th of 1980, and the snow season was over, so we didn't get to experience the snow season. We experienced the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you went right into business there? I mean, how did you hang up your
shingle?
No,
I didn't have anything. I didn't do anything because I didn't have a real estate license.
Uh-huh.
And not being a high school graduate, one of the requirements were that you had to have a high school diploma. So I didn't know if I was going to have to go to school to get my GED after that many years.
Even though you would finish some years in college without your high school
diploma. Even though I had education from listening to audio on the freeways, had a double doctorate in motivation and psychology and a triple doctorate in sales. So I sent a letter to the real estate commission, and I told them that, I meet all the requirements except I don't have the high school diploma, but I told them about my education and that I did have, and they waived it. That was
of course
the thing.
They did.
I told them that it would be if I couldn't be a realtor there, it would be a loss for me, but it'd be a bigger loss for the state of
Idaho. You are the world's best salesman. You could sell salt water in Miami.
So we did get to go to school. We did get the license, and once I got my license, it took about. When I went to school, it was only 30 hours required. Today it's 90 hours required to get your license. But 30 hours seemed like a long time to me because it was broken off over 2 or 3 weeks that I had to go. And I got my license and I went to work for a real estate company in the city of Hayden, where I still got in the city of Hayden. I was for 10 years in downtown Coeur d'Alene. And
so what was that like? What were the things that you did? I mean, I know that you must have done so many things differently, so many unique things that nobody else thought of, because that's the kind of guy it turns out you are.
Well, I went out and everybody was complaining. This is 1980, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The interest rate on my house when I bought my house was 12.5%. The payment of my house in Calabasas, in the Los Angeles area, was $200 a month. The payment on our house in Coeur d'Alene, if I only put a little bit down, which I put a 20% down payment on it, was $1,250 a month, kind of like a little culture shock there. But I wanted to keep my cash to invest in real estate because that's what I was going to do. I was going to start investing in real estate. So I wanted that money working for me. And when your payment goes from $200 to $1,200 a month, you know, you get a little bit nervous, especially in the business that I was in, selling steaks and seafood. I got paid every day. I got my profit, so it was all cash. Mm-hmm. So here I'm going into a business, and I start in June of 1980 in October, the 1st of October, I haven't gotten a check yet. Mm. I've gotten listings. I've got some sales in the hopper, but no closings, no money. I'm wondering if I've gone into the wrong business and maybe I should, you know, do something different. So I had second thoughts there for a minute. But by the end of October, my money started to roll in. And by the end of the year, I became Rookie of the Year with the most sales for any rookie, new person, and I had in sales $600,000, which at that time was pretty good. The average price in Coeur d'Alene was $60,000, was the average price. Today it's about $180,000 is the average price. Mm-hmm. And I had, so I got Rookie of the Year.
So the same motivational lessons that you've learned in your triple doctorate in sales was still working for you.
And I was out there working, and everybody else, things were bad, but they were good for me. And the reason they were good for me, everybody's complaining. I mean, when I say everybody, there are a few people working like me, but most of them were complaining, and they're hanging around the office, drinking coffee, talking to each other about how bad things are. And being a positive thinker, I don't do that. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that really bothered me was the negativity at that time of people in the area and the people that I worked with and everything. And I met with the fellow from the Chamber of Commerce, and we were talking about this, and we went to had set up a lunch with this fellow John Crossland. Sandy Emerson was the director of the Chamber of Commerce, and myself. And we're having lunch, and we're talking about how all the people are negative. Well, I had gone to this breakfast in San Diego, I think I mentioned before, with Terry Cole Whitaker, what's called the Winner's Circle Breakfast. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, we should do something like that. And so we put together a breakfast. We called it the Upbeat Breakfast.
And upbeat?
Upbeat Breakfast. And it was that we had the Chamber kind of sponsor it. And the three of us put this thing together, and we did it every week. We had a different speaker, and we had local speakers. We had speakers come in from out of town that would just be around and that we would get. We never paid the speakers.
Was this the series where you invited what's-his-name to come up and speak, and he told you how much he charged, and you said, we don't?
No, this is – no.
Okay, we'll get to that. Okay.
He did – we made a special program for him.
I want to hear about that.
Yeah, that was a special program. So, but we did have, who's the guy that did the geodesic dome?
Oh, yes, Buckminster Fuller.
Buckminster Fuller. Uh-huh. He spoke there before he died.
Yes, and, that's better if you could.
He was an interesting guy. I went to see him. He spoke at the college, and we had him come do a 20-minute talk over here. I went to see him at the college. You're just entranced listening to him. You don't know what he's saying. But you're just entranced by him.
Yeah.
And, so we have a lot of great speakers there, and people are coming to it. We're getting a big turnout. We're doing it every week. Well, it's going to be a lot every week after a couple of years. So we made it once a month we did it. So we went down to once a month after about 2 years, and we kept going. Well, the Chamber had their lunch once a month, and we had our breakfast once a month. Well, we're getting more people at our Upbeat Breakfast than they're getting at the Chamber meeting. So I decided to combine them both together and make the Upbeat Breakfast the Chamber meeting.
Oh, good.
And so I think we had a total of about 3 years before they did that. And that changed the upbeat breakfast, but it's still a good upbeat breakfast, and it's still going. This is that's 32 years ago.
Okay, so your footprint stays.
I was the founding member of that. Then the other organization that I started, and we talked about Ann Fox, was the Children's Village, and that's a fabulous organization.
Why don't you tell us a little
and
about that?
I was on founding member on that. Ann came to me and some other people, and she had a couple of kids that were at her school that were bounced around from different schools and different foster homes. They were brother and sister, and they had worked with them, and they were getting them kind of on their feet. And then they decide, health and welfare comes in and say they're going to move them to Kellogg, which is a town about 25 miles away. They're going to uproot them again and stick them with another foster family. And Anne was just beside herself, and the kids were crying and everything, and they didn't want to go. And they ended up going to Kellogg. She said, though, someday I am going to build a home for you. I'm going to build a village for you to live in, and you won't have to go from home to home. And she got a group of people together, and one night we met in a restaurant, and she talked about she was going to raise like $2 million and make an endowment and have the endowment support the Children's Village. Well, at that time, 1980, to raise $2 million in a little town, I thought it was kind of tough. In fact, I thought it was impossible. However, I like to do impossible things, so I told her to count me in.
Well, I like the way you put it when we were just talking yesterday, and you said, I told her it was nuts, count me in.
That's right.
And that doesn't just define you.
Huh?
That just defines you.
That's it.
Can't be done, count me in.
That's right.
Yes.
There's no can'ts.
Good for you.
So that's another organization that's very successful. They have two homes now. Oh, the first residents of the home were those two kids, but they were, by the time that they were like, oh, maybe 8 and 9 by the time, so it was about 8 years later. But they were still in school, and they were the first two residents of the Children's Village.
Oh, this is wonderful.
And the whole Children's Village is a great story, and she's going to get
We'll get Ann Fox here one day.
Do a program with her.
But so tell me about the luncheon that you made special for the motivational speaker that you told me about yesterday.
Okay, that was just the one time. That happened later on. When I was selling steaks and seafood in San Diego at the Upbeat Breakfast, I sold Los Angeles, Orange County, San Diego. We had offices in those places. And we used to go to the Winner's Circle Breakfast every week, whatever day it was on, some Tuesday or Wednesday. And they had different speakers. And I think the first time I went to it, and I was training people about selling steaks and seafood. I was taking them out in different areas and getting set up. And the speaker was Mark Victor Hansen. He was just starting out, and he was a motivational speaker, and he did some work with real estate companies and chiropractors, I think he specialized in, but he did motivational speakers in general for the public. And so he's doing his motivational speech, and after he's done talking, he offers his tapes that he has available for sale, and that should come down. So I went down, talked to him about buying tapes, and I said, I'll tell you what I'll do with you. I'll trade you steaks for tapes. That way it's a sale for me, and it's also a sale for him, and he gets something he wants, I get something I want. So it was a win-win-win-win situation. And he wanted more steaks than he had tapes, though. So he says, I'll tell you what, why don't I'll give you a box of these, I'll give you a set of these real estate tapes for a box of lobster tails. So I said, what am I going to do with real estate tapes? He said, well, why don't you listen to them? Maybe you'll learn something. He says, and you go to a lot of real estate offices, which I did because we went business to business, office to office, offering steaks and seafood for sale, and that's how we build our clientele. And so I took the tapes, he took the lobster tails, and we were happy. And then I was selling him steaks after that on a regular basis. And when he was speaking in different areas, he'd tell me where he's going to be, and I would drop him off in those areas, you know, that would work for me. I listened to the real estate tapes, and I put them away. because I wasn't, and I didn't sell them. I just stuck them away. When I did go on real estate, though, I did pull them out, and I'll come back to that later. So that's how I met him. So getting back to the part where I brought him in, I saw he was going to be speaking. Now, this is 1978, 79 mm-hmm. that I was dealing with Mark Victor Hansen and selling steaks. Then this is 1990, probably 94, somewhere around there, probably somewhere 90, around 1994. I read that he's going to be in Spokane speaking. And I call him up and I say, "Hey, Mark, this Marshall Mann calling. I used to sell you steaks and seafood." He says, "Yeah, how you doing?" And we talked and reminisced a little bit and told me how much he missed the great steaks. And I said, "You know, Mark, I see you're speaking in Spokane. And if we have the Chamber of Commerce over here, and we put on this upbeat breakfast every week. But I'd like to maybe do a program with you." He says, "Oh, that's great." He says, "I'd love to do it, and I only charge $1,500. Well, at that time, our Chamber of Commerce didn't have 15 cents, I think. But I said, well, they had 15 cents, but they were not coming up with $1,500 for a speaker. So I said, "I tell you what, they can't do that. But what we can do is we could charge $10 at the door, make a special deal out of it rather than being part of the upbeat breakfast, and do a program with you, charge $10 at the door, and then we'll give you the whole $10. And I'll help you sell your tapes and stuff after the meeting, and, you know, you should do really, really well, and that should be, you know, a good deal." So he said, "Okay," he says, "I'll do that." So we did that. Well, instead of, we had 200 people come to that talk. So instead of him getting $1,500, he got $2,000. That's why you want to work commission. That's the reason for commission sales. And he sold a lot of tapes and books while he was there. And not only that, but there was a new business in town who was a distributor, and he was having a meeting of all his distributors. And he hired Mark to be the keynote speaker for his conference. So now Mark's got another job up there. So Mark comes up with the other job for the second time. And again, we do the same deal, give him $10, and he gets all the money. And we had, again, another probably 200 or so people. And he did the program for the other guy. Well, while he was up there, I brought him up to the house for lunch. And Ann Fox, who was my neighbor, she lived about three doors down from me, was at the house with Dolly. And they were talking, and I brought Mark in there and introduced him to Ann. And he said to Ann, "You know, what do you do?" She says, "Well, I'm running for office for superintendent of schools for the state of Idaho." She had been superintendent of schools for Post Falls. And originally, she was the principal at Winton School. That's where she was when I met her. So, and she says, "And I have a textbook business that I do." He said, "Oh, really?" He says, "We're writing a book." He says, "I wonder if you would proof it for me and take a look at it and see what you think of it." And she proofed it for him and took a look at it. And it was a bunch of little stories, feel-good stories. And the name...
she liked it, right?
And she told him she liked it. Well, it came out a few months later. The name of the book was Chicken Soup for the Soul. Mark Victor Hansen does not speak for $1,500 anymore. He gets like $25,000 for a speaking engagement, and maybe more than that. Mm-hmm. So, and Chicken Soup for the Soul
made him.
Yeah. So they did real, real good with that. Yeah. But and if you haven't read it, you want to get that book. And there's a whole series of Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Yes, different ones. Actually, one of my guests a long time ago, a woman named Anne Hayes, she's wonderful, and she wrote a piece for Chicken Soup for the Adopted Soul. Mm. There's a book of adoption stories, which are just delicious. Okay, yes. Getting back to you. Who you were the first person who had your picture on cards and signs?
I was. No, not on
that
cards.
Well, signs.
Mark Victor Hansen, when I listened to his tapes, he had one thing on there that really stuck with me. You want people, when they think about real estate, you want them to think about you. You want to put your picture on everything you can. Put your picture on your company envelope. And at that time, I worked for a company, and I would bought these little picture stamps, stuck them on there. I stuck them on my letterheads, put them on everything so that I could. And then I had, in 1983, my broker decided to change over from being an independent office to being a Better Homes, not Better Homes and Gardens, but Better Homes Realty. And they're out of Walnut Creek, California, which is right near where we are now in San Francisco. So I went up to him. The sign guy comes walking into the office with these new signs that he had printed up, 2 feet by 2 feet. Square, and they were nice looking signs, and this was a franchise, but my broker was the franchisor for Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. So I went upstairs to him and I said, "Hey Pepper, how about if what do you think if I put my picture on the sign?" I back up a little bit. I asked the guy that brought the signs in there how much they cost. He said they cost about $4 a piece. And I was paying $2.50 for a little name writer. And I said, could you put a picture on the sign? And he said, yeah. I said, how much extra would that cost? He says, that wouldn't cost anything extra. It says it's all in the setup, and you have to pay for the setup the first time you do your signs anyway. So I said, oh, okay. So I went up and talked to Pepper, and I asked him about if it'd be okay if I put my signs on, my picture on the sign. And I'm doing the most business in that office, and I had a little bit of clout there, and Pepper said, sure, didn't even question it. So I put my picture on the sign, and my picture was the biggest thing on the sign, and the logo of the company was not the littlest thing on the sign, but it wasn't as big as my picture. And people used to think I owned the company. So I got my picture on the sign, and about, maybe a year later, I'm driving down the street, and I go by one of my listings, and somebody took and put on my picture, on my face, they pasted a picture of Rodney Dangerfield. And I kind of laughed, just like you did, when I first saw that. And I went back to my office, and I called up a friend of mine who was the who I became friends with, which was a reporter at the Spokesman Review. I became friends with the reporters at both newspapers, because I'm a great believer in marketing, and the best kind of marketing you can get is free marketing. So anytime I could get my name in the paper was a good deal. So I said, hey, Dave, why don't you drive by 324 18th Street and check it out? And he says, why? What am I going to see there? Just drive by, take a look at it. So the next day, the front page of the Spokesman Review.
Aren't you clever?
I wasn't clever. I was lucky, but I mean, it was.
I could see that coming. Exciting.
But the next day in the paper, front page, Marshall Mend gets no respect. It was a slow news day. That doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah.
But that didn't get just distributed in Coeur d'Alene. That got distributed to over 500,000 people in the inland northwest, Spokane and 50-mile radius around there, and even went farther than that. But you never know what's going to happen. One time, we're at a Chamber of Commerce meeting, maybe a couple of years after that, and the guy that makes my signs for a joke brings to the Chamber of Commerce meeting a pair of ladies' underwear with my picture on it. So I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Some people thought it was funny. Some people thought it was disgusting.
Yes. Okay.
That was an idea that didn't go very far. However, I kind of showed it around the area, and Dave was there, and I showed it to him. And the next day in the newspaper, Marshall Mend hits bottom.
And they spell your name right, so that's important.
That's
and they
absolutely
spell your
right.
Name right.
I'm a great believer that anytime your name is in the paper, it's good unless you murdered somebody. Then it's not so good.
Then it's not so good.
Yeah. I don't murder people.
You've been there long enough and done enough innovative things, apparently all your adult life or all your life, that you've made quite a name for yourself. Coeur d'Alene, and you've been in a position, I think, to get some important human rights things done. Is that
was another organization that I joined.
We don't have too much time here, but I want you to talk about that for a little bit, because that's important.
Okay, yep. I did that real quick on when I was, I just got to Coeur d'Alene, and being a Jewish person, ethnic Jew, I'm a born-again Orthodox agnostic. It's my religion, but being a Jew, which you're never always a Jew, once you're born a Jew, that's what you are. I didn't wear it on my shoulder. I didn't brag about it or anything like that to anybody. I'm living in a small town, and I know there's not a lot of Jews in that town, but I met a few Jews that I happened to meet and knew about. Well, one day, I go out, and I'm getting my, I had a lawnmower, I had a little lawn, which I was really happy I got a little lawn, so I could just get a little push mower and mow my little lawn. I didn't want to get any lawn. Everything else was natural, trees and all that kind of stuff, where you're living. So I got this little lawnmower, need to be sharpened. I took it to this guy to sharpen it. I'm in there, he's got a sign on this house for sale. And I dropped the lawnmower off, and I come back to pick it up, and I start talking to him, and I said, how's it going with selling the house? He says, awful. The guy was really negative. He looked like Tojo. He had big, thick Coke bottle glasses on, and he had one arm. And I said, well, interest rates are going to probably be coming down, which wasn't true. They didn't come down. They were at 12.5%, and they went up to 18. So you never know whether they're going up or down. But I thought they were coming down because they were so high. And when I mentioned the word interest rates, he said those blankety-blank use the N-word, and those GD Jews. And then he starts giving me this literature from the Aryan Nations.
Okay. We're going to stop here because we're out of time. Sit right here, and you'll do one more with us, yes?
Okay.
And tell us this story, because this is really important. Okay, so love letters. I'm going to just say to you, there's so many people in your story who could do well with a love letter from you. And if you ever get to it and have the time, I know that you're going to know who they are, like Pepper at your office and some of these motivational speakers. Wouldn't they all love to hear from you? Yes, they would. And it would just be such a gift to them. So I'm just going to say it like that because we want to get on to your next story where this guy is not going to be getting a love letter from any of you. No.
He's dead, I think.
Okay. So this, for now, is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and we'll be back shortly. And just remember, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, not only is every love letter its own special occasion, but you'd probably not even be surprised if you think about how many people in your life have peeked in to say hello and made changes for you. Any of them would be wonderfully happy to get a love letter from you. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen and
Marshall Mend
saying goodbye. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.